on America.
The media said what? Ha, 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 ha.
Big on America.
You are fake news.
Last call. Last call. Last call. Last call.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Last Call with your host, Lauren. And joining me in the studio this evening is my special co-host, Brent. Brent, how's it going? How are you this week?
It's going. It's going. I'm just trying to fire off a tweet saying we're live. So
we are live.
Everything's going good. You're live.
You know, a lot of stuff planned for this show. I know we have a special guest who is going to be joining us to talk about join our politics panel. We're going to be talking about some of the major political events of this week. I just wanted to start out by telling everybody a little bit about how my week went, because this is my show, so I will talk a little bit about myself. So what my wife and I like to do is we do this kind of what we call rosebud thorn, which is this like a way of keeping our mental health headspace in the right place during these like really crazy times. And so rose is something good that happened to you this week. Thorn is something bad that happened this week. And then bud is something that you're looking forward to in the future. So Brent, why don't you and I kind of share our rosebud thorn? I'll go ahead and start. My rose for this week was on Wednesday. I got a really good email that I've been kind of waiting for. I don't know. I don't want to like spill the beans, but it is some good news about a possible future run for something.
You don't get to tease that. That's not right.
It's just I emailed an influential person, a former mayor of Stockton, California, perhaps. And we're going to have coffee next week, and I'm looking forward to kind of picking his brain about A, what it's like to be a mayor, but B, since this is Michael Tubbs, and since he left the mayorship in Stockton, he started a PAC and nonprofit called EPIC, which is centered around ending poverty in California. So I'm really interested in getting into picking his brain about some policies that he thinks are going to help people, working people here in California. Because although I love my home state, it's beautiful. It is really expensive to live. And, you know, as our next guest.
I'm saying Angelica has some thoughts on that as well.
Yes. So what was a rose for you?
Okay, we're doing rose for rose here. Mine's going to be trivial compared to yours because I'm doing the stay-at-home dad thing. And nice. My rose this week has been, and it'll come up later in Bud and Thorn, it's been we got a 2.5 foot tall, 10 foot round above ground pool in our tiny backyard. We have a really nice townhouse. And when my wife and I were, we bought the house before we were engaged, and I wanted no yard. And when I meant no yard, I meant no yard. I did not want to do yard work. So we have a 10 foot deep by 25 foot wide spot in our backyard that was bark dust that now we've ripped out and fixed the drainage and is just rubber bark mulch, like zero maintenance. But we managed to find an above ground pool, and we've had that set up for the last week. And my rose has been going out on our deck and looking, and just the kids just going absolutely ballistic. They've got a 10-foot round trampoline and a 10-foot above ground pool, and they just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and they've just been going crazy.
Nice.
Every day the weather is cooperated, and so
getting that's my Michael Phelps on, huh?
Exactly.
Hey, got to do something to get these scholarships. You know, exactly. I really should look at getting an above ground pool. Our backyard is big enough for one, for an in ground pool. And I think, like, I have a buddy of mine who just got one for $33,000, and I was like, ah, no, thank you.
This is an $88 Walmart screamer that then we've had to spend, $300 chemicals and whatever just to get, you know, truly set up right. But it's
One of those ones that has like the pump and stuff in it.
Yeah. And it's just inflate one ring and then you put the hose in it. And because the ring is there and inflated, it just lifts up as it gets fuller with water. And you turn off the hose and then, it's got, I think it's 1,000 gallons or something. It's not that big, but it's a matter of, it's enough that all three kids can splash around and goof around. And all of our kids are water babies. And so just watching them have a blast is, fills the heart.
Nice. My thorn this week is kind of like another like similar kind of pet project thing is, I've noticed that, California, we have these drought restrictions where you're only supposed to water 2 days a week and you're supposed to limit the amount that you water. And I noticed on it was either Wednesday or Thursday, I walked outside. Mind you, it's been like 100+. It's 107 degrees today. It's been 100+ for a week. It's looking like it's going to be 100+ for another 2 weeks. I look to the neighbor on the left and to the right. Both of them have the greenest grass ever. And my grass, I don't have grass, actually. It is just dead. It is dust. I went out there with like my golf club and I like did a swing and took out a divot and it was just dust. And I'm thinking, you know what? If I have to sacrifice so you guys can have green grass, my yard looks, it's low and it's like we pay the gardener or whatever to like trim it, but it's like, I'm going to paint my grass green.
There's companies that do that.
I know. I was just really upset about it. It's like, we're supposed to be like in it for each other, right? Use your water other places. I've like stopped watering completely and the rest of you people just let it go. So that was my thorn. I was upset with my neighbors.
Yeah. My thorn is going back to the pool and the fact that we bought a $90 okay whatever thing and that every day it's been, I need to go get this or I need to get that in order to keep the water clear because obviously if you have a pool, when it's cloudy, that's not good. I don't need sick kids from it, but it's like every single day it's another little annoying thing that like if it would have shown up yesterday, I would have been able to take care of it when I was getting the other thing. And so mine has just been incessantly back and forth to stores to or online and ordering this and trying to find something to hold me over until it shows up.
Nice. Yeah, that's probably like part of the reason I don't want to get a pool. Okay, last thing. This week, in fact, yesterday, I bought my tickets, to take myself, my wife, and our two littles, down to Southern California to our next guest's, Angelica's neck of the woods there in Southern California to watch them play the Trojans of the University of Southern California. And I'm a little torn by that because although Fresno State's my alma mater, I got into USC a long time ago, like 15 years ago. And that's been like my favorite school forever. It was just, I didn't have the $40,000 a year to pay for it.
It's amazing.
But so that's what I'm looking forward to. We're playing football in the Coliseum and I'm looking forward to it.
That'll be awesome. My bud was, hey, it's political, quarters here. I've been digging through and checking on who's been telling the truth and who hasn't, who's doing what, how they're doing it. So there's a lot of tea leaves out there right now to be read. And so I've been entertaining myself and making some calls and discussions and predictions that, if I'm right, could be setting me up for some more things in the future. Being able to break down an FEC report and see what somebody's actually doing without them telling you is a skill. And amazingly, people really want to know what those reports really say versus just their top line information. So I've been, yes, been late in the evening, goof around. I mean, I found on, it was the night of the 14th into the 15th. So that was, yeah, so that was Thursday night into Friday morning. For no apparent reason, 10:30 Pacific, 1:30 Eastern time, Marjorie Taylor Greene started turning in edits of every single one of her FEC reports that she's ever filed back to 2019. And I'm like, why is she burying this in the middle of the night? And you know, when tomorrow on the 15th, all the flood of your report, my report, everybody's report's going to become piling in. And I put a tweet out about it. And I've heard back from some people that there's some very interesting information that's there and saying, wow, good catch. And, you know, it's, you know, doing an edit because there was an error is the right thing to do. But when all of a sudden you're editing every single FEC report you've ever submitted, it looks weird. And then when you turn it in the middle of the night, in the middle of filing week. So, yeah, you know, been a bit of a you know, political wise, a bit of a fun week. And I really think that as I hone my skills on that, it builds towards a better me and a better future for myself.
Something's fishy in the state of Denmark.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
So we're on to FECs and federal candidates. Should we introduce
now
our friend Angelica?
Introduce our friend Angelica and bring her on, and I'll give her kind of a little bit of a intro, and I'll let her, of course, you know, introduce herself. But Angelica is running for Congress in California's 29th congressional district. Angelica, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Nice to be back.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the 29th congressional district?
Yeah, we're right here in the East San Fernando Valley, which is 100% in LA County. We're in the northeastern part of it. And I am running a 100% people powered grassroots campaign. We got super close in 2020. We got 43.3% of the vote with less than $80,000 in our pockets of, you know, grassroots 100%, you know, individual donations and small grassroots PACs that donated a little bit here and there. And we were up against a 25-year entrenched career politician with over $1,400,000 in their pockets of corporate funds and super PAC. I'm sorry?
You took him on. You took him on with $80,000 in your in your bank, in your war chest, versus a guy that had $1 million and got that much of the vote?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, actually, so we spend, you know, not even $80,000. He's already spent $1 million, or yeah, about $1 million, $1,095,000. So, I mean, he's definitely scared. You know, we spend, I think so far, $60,000+. We just turned in our report the other day. I can try to check, but since you're running those numbers, maybe you can check them out. In fact, somebody just tweeted a little while ago, I guess some guy who like runs data and does the thing that you're trying to get into, I guess, found some weird expenses out there. And so, you know, so it's, you know, running those numbers and taking a look at where the money goes, you know, you'd find out some things. And this guy has over 10 years of FEC filings, you know, and it's like, it'd be probably a fun project if you're feeling bored.
I know. So,
I don't know that I'm that bored.
Go back to
would it be helpful? Nevada. Yeah. But no, I mean, if you take a look at exactly, I mean, if you go back 10 years, you take a look, you'll see that he's given his wife almost $500,000 in fees. He's given Nuri Martinez, who's the president of the Los Angeles City Council. Her husband runs a political strategist company. He's gotten over, I think, $500,000. And that's just, you know, out of Tony's campaign. So I'm sure it's like super sketchy here in the San Fernando Valley. We have a bunch of Latino and Democrat like candidates that have been super, super sketch. And people are tired of it. This is, I think, why we have been, you know, having such a great response is that people see it. And in our campaign, we've been very honest, very truthful, very transparent. And, you know, we don't take any corporate funding, which allows us to be that way. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's been quite interesting. So, yeah.
I want to get into to kind of this kind of topic because the guy you're running against, Tony, is it Cardenza?
Cardenas.
He is an incumbent and he is a Democrat. And I noticed that, you know, the challenge that we have in this country is, and, you know, Brent and I have talked about this for years, you know, is this the right Democrat, the blue, no matter who folks. And it sounds like, you know, this is the type of person who's just kind of running as a Democrat and is really doing some of the shadier things that is giving Democrats a bad name. And it's the reason why that, you know, other folks who are running under banners like Medicare for All, like that you're running under, you know, kind of have this rap of, you know, Republicans and Democrats, there's no difference. Look at them. I think that Tony serves as an example of that. How do you kind of portray yourself to the public at large, and you know, how do you get past these barriers of conservative Democrat or progressive Democrat to really break through, to really reach people? Is you know, the first thing I saw on your website was putting people first. How do you identify yourself, and how do you go about talking to folks when you're out there on the campaign trail?
Well, I mean, when it comes down to it here and in this district, in this area, if you want to win, you have to be a Democrat. Like, that's just no ways around it. So clearly, you know, people have figured that out. This is my, my third run. My first run was a Green. And, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, are we running for fun? Or are we running to get power? And I know I'm running to get power. So here we are. So, I mean, I can't, you know, it is what it is. When it comes down to it, I think people need to be able to know who these candidates are, where their money comes from, where do they stand on the issues. A lot of the times, I don't think people do know that because they don't have time to. The candidate themselves aren't being transparent. There's, you know, there's so many ways to hide away all of these bits of data. And as you know, you know over there, it's really hard to go through all of this stuff. And it's almost impossible unless you have tools and somebody who's an expert going through it and et cetera. So I think it's a matter of people not being aware just how terrible these candidates can be. The fact that they're not doing anything and how harmful that is as well. I think that, you know, when you're facing a Republican and a conservative or whatever, you have that, you know, us versus them or whatever, like, you know, right versus left. When you're dealing with two Democrats, it's like it's more involved. You really have to get into the nitty gritty. And with us, you know, we've been super transparent. We have our platform up on our website. We try our best to post things on social media to react to things that are happening, to give our points of view. We should be updating our stuff for November very soon, and we're going to be adding some bits of points to our to our platform, sorry. And we're going to be also including a plan as to how we're going to, when we want to utilize our office space. So we want to be super transparent of what we're trying to do, what issues we want to stand behind, and, you know, our plan of how we want to use our time. So I think that the fact that we've been very honest, you know, we talk to everybody, we talk to Republicans, we talk to Democrats, we talk to independents. You know, we don't leave anybody behind because we don't really have the fancy tools to do that. So most people who are running for office, especially establishment candidates, have like the PEI and I don't know, NPG, Van, and this, that, and the other, all these like fancy softwares and tools. And they're able to really pinpoint and target and this, that, and the other, and basically omit a bunch of people and focus on a certain set of voters that people are predicting are going to be the ones who are going to turn out for you, et cetera. We don't really do that. We focus on areas. We focus on, you know, whose data do we have? Do we have phone numbers? Do we have emails? So we're working off of raw data. We go down to Norwalk to the county registrar, and we get a CD of, if you can believe it, of information. And that's how we've been, breaking down our data. So we were able to get 43.3% of the vote with no strategists, with no experts, with not even Excel. Okay. We were using like Google Sheets and stuff like that. And making it happen. So we did that in the middle of a pandemic. We did that without being able to talk to people. We did that without being able to have real life events. We did that. I'm a mother. I have five kids. And so all five were at home. Four of them were students at the time. Mm-hmm. So it was like Little House on the Prairie up in this motherfucker where like, air, like all the grades and stuff going on in my house. And like, we were trying to figure out tablets and this, that, and the other. I had to go and buy things. And, you know, it was crazy. And by like 2 months into it, I was ready to jump out the window with the tablet. You know what I'm saying? But it was what it was. And we were doing all of that. My dad passed away in August of that year, right in the middle of everything. Not of COVID, but because of COVID, his health care was just totally just, it wasn't well. And so, you know, we ended up, he didn't feel good. He was like, you know, I need to go to the hospital. We went to the hospital, and he didn't want to call 911. He didn't want to deal with bills, and he didn't make it. He died in my car. So this is what we're doing. We're dealing with real life experiences, and we're making calls, and we're making like life and death decisions based on what we think we can afford. And you know, this is what we're left with. What could have been, right? What if we would have called 911? Could he have? Maybe yes, maybe no. We'll never know, you know. And I had to, you know, live through that. This is what our community is living through. We are very transparent. I've been very open about, you know, just my life, and I share and things like that on, especially on my Instagram. So I think that we've built a relationship with our community where, you know, maybe I overshare or whatever, but, you know, people need to know that I'm a regular person. I mean, that's just what we do. And sometimes I only have life things going on. It's not everything is like, you know, election related. So you know, we're open with our community, and I think that they can relate to that. They understand that we're going through a lot of things, and maybe if they don't agree with the policy, I think they understand that what we're trying to do is to really help the community. So they know that even if they don't agree with the tactic, they understand that this is something to help the community. And they, a lot of people, even conservatives, Republicans, feel that you know, we do need to move towards something different, a different direction, maybe, you know, more this way than that way. And so they feel that sometimes having a more radical vision is the only way to you know, move it over a little bit, because, you know, politics is, you know, it's a long term game. And if you guys are, you know, been paying attention, nothing happens overnight, you know. And so, it's just being open.
I'm wondering, so like, if you could give your maybe two or three of the biggest differences that you think people should know about between yourself and Tony, what would those three things be?
We are 100% people powered and people funded. We do not take any corporate funding. No super PAC money, no mega corporation, you know, funding, any of that. So we're 100% funded by the people. That's one thing. We haven't given tons of money to friends and family, and have a full on record of that. Tony has given right now up into the millions, at least over $1 million to his friends and family, including his wife, his son, his stepdaughter, and, you know, other politicians, family members here in the area. That's another difference. And I've never been accused of sexually assaulting, harassing anybody. You know, that's I'm a human resources professional, and I have over 10 years of experience dealing with people in the workplace, and just as a mother, just as a woman dealing with people in general. You know, I've been able to develop some skills to prevent me getting into making poor decisions that might get me into something along those lines. That's another one.
Ooh. I should have Googled. has he been accused
yes.
of?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, wow. And he agrees to everything that was said that happened throughout the relationship, other than the actual molestation part. He agrees that he met her and then met her dad and moved him out and gave them a job, gave him a job, and got his rent paid, all the family's rent paid. For over like 5 years, he agreed to that. He agreed that he was taking her on one-on-one trips to fancy golf courses and things like that. He agreed to all of that. He just said that the part that she says that he molested her, that part wasn't true. But everything else in that lawsuit, you know, he more or less agreed to. Some weird happened. We're not sure. Something happened with the lawyers. The lawyers who were defending her was like Gloria Albright's daughter's law firm. Super sketch. I forget her name. She actually had defended not Epstein, with the other guy, the Hollywood guy. There was another guy, Weinstein. Right. Yeah. So that guy, so he, that this is who, you know, it was a very strange legal case that got thrown out the window. Basically, what happened was that he was running against a Republican that time. And so Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the Democratic Party decided to look the other way. And this was right in the heat of like Me Too, you know,
the Henry Cuellar. See, OK, yeah. I'm going to bring in Brent in this conversation, because Brent and I, we agree on most things, but, you know, there's definitely, you know,
problems. You pointed out the differences.
I was just saying, there's definitely problems within the Democratic Party, that not every Democrat is the same. We're not all equal. There are the blue, no matter who discussion is thrown out the window. It very much matters who. And I think that if we could talk to the electorate about, look, I'm a Democrat and these are the values I believe in, and look, I'm living those values, then it's all good. But to say I'm a Democrat and that gives me an automatic pass on any kind of scrutiny, I think is problematic. Even in this time where it's like, you know, democracy on the line, I get it. But it doesn't,
my point is, it doesn't fix democracy being on the line if we're just like, oh, okay, well, if we're doing the same things, because then democracy's on the line is just something we say at the time we vote. You know, we have to live it. We have to be honest about it and stand up for it and call ourselves out and hold ourselves to a higher standard and not say, oh, you're bashing a Dem. You know, I've been very loud about not having Dems, primary Dems, Dems attacking Dems in races other than the only race where I openly supported it myself was Jamie McLeod Skinner against Kurt Schrader in Oregon's 5th. And the reason for that was, I've grown up in this area, and Kurt Schrader was the Joe Manchin of the House. And so I personally knew that. Until today, I hadn't met Angelica. I looked her up getting ready for this episode today. But, you know, in general, my policy was let's not beat up our own side unless somebody needs to be beat up. And that's, you know, we have a 20% approval rating of Congress with a 92%, you know, incumbency bias. It's because everybody says my representative is fine. It's all y'all's representatives that are creating the problem. There are some bad ones on our side. I just don't know who they are. Angelica's in this for a good fight, and I believe in it now hearing about this. I just didn't know that one race. And so it's one of those things, though, that we have a lot of people that are just saying, well, this is a good Democrat, but they're not a great enough Democrat, and have people throwing money at them and not giving money to Angelica to go actually deal with somebody that really could be a problem. And Jamie McLeod Skinner had the same problem in the beginning of her run, was like she was very well connected and better funding than I ever was, better than Angelica is right now. But she could have used a lot more help. But there are people that are Democrats that are like, oh, no, we want to go throw money, good money after bad, on this other race for no reason. And that frustrates me when democracy is on
the Marcus. Sorry. Excuse me.
Sorry. But
I don't see Marcus Flowers winning that race. And there's, you know, millions.
I don't think that another $1 million is going to do it. I think that $1 million spread out amongst Angelica, against Jamie McLeod Skinner, against some of these people that have new boundaries where they're just trying to hold on, you know, is better spent. You know, we need to target purple districts. And if they're represented by Democrats, do everything we can to hold them. And if they're represented by Republicans, do everything we can to flip them. But everybody looks at Cook Political Report and says, oh, that district's totally red. And then somebody will jump in it and they'll be like, let's virtual signal. Let's give this guy a fire hose of money and just see what happens. And they pass up on good people trying to do bigger things. I'm not a fan of, oh, I just ran to change the narrative. That drives me nuts. In somebody's speech, you know, in late November when they come out after they've lost. Well, I was successful because I changed the narrative. I was successful because I drugged the conversation. We need action, and we need people like Angelica willing to go put in that action. And she's further to the left than I am, but I'm okay with that because that's where the conversation change and the compromise comes in is – Angelica stands over here and I'm over here. And then somebody else, can we drag that conversation that way? Can we meet somewhere? You know, the political extremes, I don't think that we ever should be saying, okay, we're going to go with this extreme or that extreme. I just think that obviously I'd like the extremes on our side to have more power.
Have a little more
because the extremes on the other side are fascism, which isn't a political extreme. That's removing our form of self-governance. But, you know, at the end of the day, new blood, new voices change the conversation. But we got to win with them. Just saying, man, I built a movement on Twitter and I got 30,000 followers. And those 30,000 followers loved what I said is who cares?
And then got 2% of the vote.
Yep.
Like, come on. Right.
Yeah.
So that kind of like pulls us into politics panel topic for one of the topics that we're going to talk about today. So it's just open discussion with everybody. And Angelica, thanks again for joining us. Is kind of, you know, to Brent's point. You know, it was a couple of weeks ago we found out that House Majority PAC, which is Nancy Pelosi's PAC, is funding extreme Republican candidates to the tune of millions of dollars. Do you have an opinion on that? With the hope that, let me just put out the strategy. So the hope is that by giving money and uplifting these extreme candidates, that they will win their Republican primaries and be easier for Democrats to dispatch in November. I think personally that that strategy would have been, you know, kind of like wild, inventive, maybe 10 years ago. Now Republicans don't have any shame, in my opinion, yeah. Where they're not, someone could say some weird outlandish stuff. They're openly saying, yeah, we'll overthrow the government. A lady the other day said, thank you for protecting white lives. And nobody blinked an eye. I didn't hear anybody say, oh, that's not what we represent. Yeah. I didn't hear any of it. So I don't think it's really that great of a strategy in today's Republican Party. Angelica, what are your thoughts?
Well, I hadn't heard about that until now, but I'm not surprised. What I'm more concerned is the fact that the Democratic Party, that they're not learning from their past mistakes, because didn't we see this before in 2016? You know, the Hillary Clinton campaign, along with the DNC, was working in cahoots with the mainstream media to uplift Donald Trump in order to make it easier to beat him. And then what we ended up with Donald Trump as president. I think you're right. I think they're underestimating just how racist and outright fascistic this country can be. How people really are hateful and still are. Feeling a certain type of way. I think that the Democratic Party has done so much damage against progressive movement. They're actively out there campaigning against us. You know, you have all these sham corporations and super PACs that pop up out of nowhere. You know, like I said, you know, last time we spent, what, $80,000? We've raised like $75,000. Why is it that a super PAC got turned up just to purposefully raise over $300,000 for Tony Cardenas? They spent over $240,000 in independent expenditure this last time around, on top of the $1 million that Tony has already spent on the campaign against a candidate that only has raised like $75,000 this turnaround. Why are they spending so much money against and efforts against candidates like us? Why?
Okay, I'm going to jump in here because we're on the PAC, super PAC, corporate money thing, and Lauren and I differ here. I want campaign finance reform. I want it with all my heart. But I say we got to play with the same tool chest as everybody else. And if anybody's dumb enough to give me $100,000, then I'm taking it. I don't care who they are. I don't care if it's the NRA that I'm going to vote against every single time. They're dumb enough to put it in here so that they can get me elected. Let's take it. Let's fight fire. Let's go. But we need to do campaign finance reform. But we can't get it unless we get a majority of people in Congress, in the Senate, that want to do it. And they just have to have the mindset of whatever it takes to fundraise, to get the information out to the voters so you can get the votes, and then we can fix it. We can't fix it on a podcast, and we can't fix it on Twitter or any other platform. It's going to take people like yourself getting elected. But do you think at all ever that you're handicapping yourself by turning down any sort of corporate money? I fought with Lauren about it. I fought with Anne Marie Danimas about it. I fought with multiple people. That somebody comes at you with a $10,000 check, you know, spend it on a voter outreach thing that says why that $10,000 check shouldn't have come, but now you're able to talk to them and how you want to fix it in the future.
Yeah, I will say not all like corporations are created equal. And not all organizations are created equal. So like, while, you know, I'm becoming more open to like organizations that, you know, share my value in that sense. And a lot of the political left have now kind of adopted your stance, Brent, and said, you know what, we're going to make our own super PAC so we can fund candidates who share our values. In that sense, I would be more open to, but like, I'm probably not taking NRA money.
I just was using them as an extreme example of somebody that would never come to me. I just was saying that, you know, Democrats like to turn down money. And I understand the concept, but if you can get elected with that money and then show there was no corruption by not, you know, voting any differently than you would have voted, then, you know, that shows you're whatever. You may not get their money for your reelection, but we've got a chance to make a difference. And I just think we got to take every tool that's presented to us on the way there to be able to use and have in our backpacks to pull out when we need it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do believe that, you know, we need to, you know, we're out here talking the talk. We got to walk the walk. And I think that at least in my race, we've already shown that you don't need millions of dollars and all this stuff in order to make, you know, a big break in a race. I think that if we would have had maybe $20,000 and, 20 more, you know, super volunteers, we would have been able to win this last time around. We did better than campaigns that had Bernie Sanders, AOC, Our Revolution, Justice Democrats, and millions of dollars behind them. So I think that there's something to be said, you know what I mean, that money isn't always everything, and it doesn't really guarantee outcomes, and having a million Twitter followers doesn't do it, and having a bunch of likes on Instagram isn't going to do it either. So that's my thing. I do believe that, you know, we have an opportunity with organizing and teaching people how to organize, that we have a very good opportunity to make some big wins. What I plan on doing once I win is to open up my spaces for teaching people how to run campaigns. And that's in both my physical office. We hope to have an office space large enough to be able to share with our community. We want it to be a community empowerment center along with our office space, and also our social medias. We hope to be able to have this be a learning platform for our community and across the country. Some people don't know how to sort an Excel sheet, you know, for the life of them. And believe me, I don't even like messing with spreadsheets, but it's a very powerful tool to be able to use and to have at our disposal. Here in Los Angeles, we have Kenneth Mejia, who's running for city controller, who has been able to essentially already be doing the job, which is running through data and doing a better job at it by being transparent and showing the data and finding out where there's discrepancies, where there's people are getting disproportionately ticketed, parking tickets, to who's being pulled over, what race are these people, where are the homeless sweeps happening, where is affordable housing at, you know, all of these things. So data is very powerful, and I think that that's something that we can teach our organizing community, how to get organizing 101, and then how to start winning campaigns. I think it's very doable. The only reason why we don't have more good people, regular people in office, is because they don't have the tools. They don't have, you know, they don't know how to do it. And it's just as easy as 1, 2, 3 ABC. And once you get the right tools together, and you don't need expensive tools, you don't need consultants and all this fancy stuff. You just need people, power, passion, and love for what you're doing. And that's what we're dealing with here in my district, in California's 29th congressional district.
That's awesome. You know,
Can I pile on to that for a second?
Yeah, go for
it. For any potential future candidates, amongst my kitchen cabinet and I, the number one topic that comes up when we're talking about any other race anywhere in the country, whether it's Tim Ryan for Senate, Alan Ellison for Congress in Florida, and we talk about big names and small names, like, because we're political nerds. I mean, it's what we are. But we talk about it. It's like, there are so many people doing what you're doing that are doing it right, in my opinion. And then there's these other people that it's like, you're screaming at the TV going, would you please surround yourself with at least one person that's not getting a commission-based check on what you spend the money on or what you fundraise, because these people are just leading you to talking points to raise money that they get a cut. Like, this is like, you need somebody that cares because they live in your district and they've got to live in this scenario and they're not getting paid anything, their investment is they just want it fixed. Like, and there are way too many people running for office that don't have that person around them or had it in their first run, but had success, but not all. And then the consultants come in and say, hey, we can, and they go away from what made them resonate. They go from a 48-52 loss to, you know, the next time around going 43-57 and getting blown out. And so I think it's really important that candidates know you need some reality check, non-yes people around you that have lived a similar life, not the same life, but that are willing to come over to your house, sit down, and then say, you're wrong, and just call you out on it. And you got to know them well enough to know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll
share with you the advice. So my grandfather actually passed away before our campaign got really up and running. But when we were starting out, he told me to get a piece of paper and write down five names on it of the people that I trust the most, and that they would be the people that would serve as that exact purpose of that sounding board. So I'm going to tell you the truth about things. But just getting into the further discussion, this week, we learned about a tax and climate deal that was working out in the Senate that has been killed by our favorite punching bag, Joe Manchin, and who said he's not going to support any of these agreements. Really just quick question to you, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it because I think, you know, we are very much in agreement on Joe Manchin. But I'm wondering, is Joe Manchin sabotaging the president's agenda on purpose and Democrats' agenda on purpose on the large scale? And what should be done before November if that's the case?
Well, you know, you shared a gem that your grandpa shared with you, and I'm going to share a gem that my dad shared with me. And so my dad went to second grade. He could barely read. He used to say, like, hey, I could barely use Spanish, let alone English. You know what I mean? He came over here undocumented at like 21 years old and this, that, and the other. He didn't realize he didn't know how to read until he got here, because when he was, you know, back at home, he didn't realize he didn't know how to read. But one thing it was very observant. He's a very observant man. And so one thing that he told me is, like, the Republicans, they're really good at, like, fighting for what they're fighting for. He's like, and that thing changes. It's never the same thing, but they'll fight hard regardless of where they stand. He's like, and they're a very loud minority, he says. They're a very loud minority. They're actually a minority. He goes, the Democrats, that's a whole other thing. He goes, the Democrats, they're really good at pushing something really hard when they can do nothing about it. But when they can, he would say, se hacen pendejos, which translates to they act stupid. Like, they just don't know. And they're really good at passing on the baton, which is one thing that an observation that he made throughout, like, you know, he got here like in the 70s sometime. So like sometime in the 80s on this way, like Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, they were the senators here, or like in the 90s or whatever. And they would always trade positions, good guy, good cop, bad cop. And things couldn't get passed because one or the other. And this is something that the Democrats are just to the point that somebody who's got second grade education, who doesn't really pay attention, couldn't even vote, was able to clearly see that the Democrats have the problem of not using power, not wielding it. What did Joe Biden say the second he got into the presidency? I'm not going to do executive whatever. Excuse me, let me just slice them up myself. You know what I mean? Like, what is he doing? He's literally castrated himself just for no apparent reason. He just went for it. Why would he do that? The Republicans use every single bit of power. They will block everything. They will block a judge. They will do this. And then here we have our guys we're going to cooperate. We're going to reach across the aisle type of bullshit. Like, why are we doing that? Why are we doing that? When do you ever see them do that with us over on this side? So I think that that's one of those problems that we have is that, you know, we don't seize the moment. And like right now, this is a desperate time, calls for desperate measures. And I think that right now we were running out of time. Time is of the essence. There's no more time to waste. So the time is now. So this is what we're doing. And I think a lot of people are feeling that the economy sucked. The pandemic was handled horribly. The climate is on its way out. Like, I mean, things, education, our kids aren't even safe in schools, let alone being taught anything. Like, things are just not getting better and people are over with it. I'm both like on the liberal side, on the conservative side, everybody is tired of it.
Sidebar, are you one of those people? I think we had a poll that came out that so like 92% of people 18 to 29 wanted Joe to step aside and have a different nominee for president 2024.
Oh God,
I am one of those people ages of 19 and 29 that feel that way. That is me. Yes, I am one of that is us. I'm a little bit outside of that age group.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, Joe Manchin, I go back and forth. I almost feel like they kind of, like, keep him around as a cover, that there's more than Joe Manchin.
I mean, he was there to keep Bernie Sanders out. Joe Manchin, or which Joe are we talking about?
Yeah, Joe Manchin.
Oh, Joe Manchin. That's to go as far as I'm concerned. Joe Biden, oh my God, he needs to somebody get your grandpa. Like, it's so embarrassing. If you watch international news, oh my gosh, it's so embarrassing. Oh my God, it's almost like if he wasn't so awful, an awful human being, I would be like, oh my God, you guys, it's elder abuse. But like, you know, karma works in crazy ways. He needs to stop it. And the thing is, like, well, then there's Kamala. Oh snap! And then who's after Kamala? What's the order of progression? Like it's kind of cray cray. I don't know. It's rough. But if we want to win,
we're gonna get to Biden.
If we want to win in 2024, I think the Democrats are gonna have to. I don't know. Joe's gonna be like, oh, my foot, my heart, my foot. And then like Kamala's gonna be like, oh, my husband's heart and my husband's foot. Like, we're gonna have to sit this one out, you guys, and get creative.
I'm calling time out here because I see the argument. I understand the argument. The problem is the argument needs to start up in December or January, because right now we need to stop talking about our own side's weaknesses. We need to build each other up, and we have to hold these midterms.
And bro, when the president is going around the world and showing the whole world the weaknesses, I think that we're going to be like, oh, let's just not talk about it. This is how we get to how we go. Oh, let's not talk about old pervy Uncle Bob. We'll just like keep an eye on him and like just like, you know, it'll be all right. The fuck? That's how we end up having the problems that we're having. Didn't Brent, I believe earlier in this program itself, he said that we need to call ourselves out. Calling ourselves out is the time of now.
Yes.
Period.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. But you also, never mind.
So part of the show is about listener engagement. So we have a question for you that says, if you get into office, what will be the first thing that you will change?
Well, as far as like how Tony does things and how I plan on doing things, is I hope to have my office space be welcoming. He's up in like on the second floor of like a shopping center, like all like weird, and like the elevator is way in the back. You think that there's no elevator there. It's all weird. The door is locked. You can't even get in. It's like, who is this? What do you want? You know what I mean? There's like a little radio intercom that comes on when you want to go into the office. So that's the first thing I want to change, is to have an office space that's welcoming, that is like a large space that we can share with the community. So that's number one.
Nice. I know you talked about schools earlier, our schools not being safe. I was one of those people that was like, we'll just say very upset at the pictures that were released of people, checking the police officers in Uvalde, checking their phone, and laughing while kids are being murdered. You know, what are some of the things that you would change towards schools?
Well, I think that, like, the Uvalde situation in the schools, like, that's a really wide, like, you know, question. What would I do in regards for schools, period? I think that we need to make sure that we're looking at where the funding is going. We need to make it more transparent, and we need to get rid of all of these, like, weird corruption ways that money gets funneled. There's a lot of money there, and there's a lot of waste happening. I think that we need to work on that. We need to make it so that we need to stop the charter school pipeline that's just like a big old scam that, you know, is using tax funds to, like, make up, you know, people and organizations money. They call it nonprofit, but believe me, people are making profits. That's the schooling thing. We need to have better funding, and we need to have teachers having assistance. And we're here in Los Angeles, for example, we have a problem of not enough students, and that's why the charter schools creep in, which still doesn't make any sense because there's not enough students, which is why we have empty classrooms, and it's just all weird. So what we need to do is smaller classroom sizes, more teachers, and teachers' aid, more opportunities for jobs. It's the Green New Deal part of it all, where it would be implementing opportunities for jobs, guaranteed jobs, and all over the place, from schools to hospitals to clinics to everything. We should have people who want to work. We have work that needs to be done, from infrastructure to social care to et cetera. Schools, I think that we need to focus on civility. I think that the kids should be in charge of cleaning the damn schools. In Mexico, you clean your school. Every classroom has a turn to clean the school. Classrooms participate in the distribution of food during lunchtime, cooking food, actually cooking some of the food. Some of it obviously is going to take some, whatever. But getting better food in the schools, all of these things. There's all of these corporations making all kinds of fat ass money on, like, nasty ass food that goes straight to the trash that nobody wants it. It goes straight into the trash, but what they get to keep that money in their pocket. So things like that, there's enough funding already. I think that federally we need to keep an eye on that and get on all up at everybody's booty. Like, I was like, should I just run for school board? We'll see later. But, like, you know, we need to get, like, common sense into a lot of these things. You know what I mean? And then are we focusing? Are we teacher centric? Are we student centric? Like, what's going on over here too? So all of those things, you know what I mean? We need to make sure that we're doing things right. That's on one thing. Police and safety and all of this stuff. That's a whole other thing. Police get too much money. We need to figure it out. That police department shows us that all the money, all the training, all the guns, all the gear, it doesn't fucking matter anything, because this police department had the training for this exact same thing at that campus, using, like, they use those same classrooms for this practice run, and they were not able to do anything. So obviously more guns and more this is not the solution. I believe, going back to the schooling thing, creating a sense of civility, freaking people, and less electronics, paper, pencils, writing things out, human contact. That's what we need. We have a lack of humanity in this country that if people don't see that, I don't know what the fuck's wrong with you. People are lacking humanity. And what we're seeing is mental health issues. It's not a gun thing. I don't think it's a gun thing personally. It's a mental health issue thing. It's like, oh, well, don't, you're, like, you know, making all mental health issue people, like, oh, blah, blah, blah. As a person that has dealt with depression, anxiety, and et cetera, yes, not all people with mental health issues are going to go shoot up a school. But guess what? People who shoot up a school have mental health issues. So if we had universal health care, if we had resources for these people, we have neighbors around here that are fucking scary as hell. And it would be great to have some resources, because we see it. We see these people, but there's no resources. We see the ticking bomb. We see it happening, but there's nothing for us to do. You see your family member may being said ticking time bomb. What the grandma and grandpa's options were. Grandma got blasted right before he went over to the school to go kill some kids because this kid was angry, right? So what are we doing to get to the root of the problem? And I don't think it's a gun grab. If anything, I mean, in my opinion, you know, the second, the Constitution is there for a good reason. Second Amendment is there for a good reason. You know, the whole militia thing, obviously we don't stand a chance against the whole freaking government, clearly. But what if we have a police station that goes rogue? The people should be able to like handle it down before, you know, well, some other, whatever, I don't know. Point being is that you have small pockets of people that can go rogue. Good people, you know what I mean? Whatever, maybe. You gotta make it possible for, like, you know, one of those guys that did run in there and get their kid, grab the gun from like from the barber shop and stuff like that. So, you know what I mean? Like, maybe there's some room for it, whatever. Point being though, that's not the solution for safety in the schools. Safety in the schools means well-balanced people with healthcare, people who have been raised to learn that, you know, when you hit somebody, they hurt, you know what I mean? Kindness. Yeah. This stuff, like, I've worked at schools, I worked at after school programs, I worked at, you know, with elementary kids, with junior high kids. You know, these kids are deep and they can understand these things. And when they're acting out, when you talk to them in a deep level, they can recognize that their actions, you know, lead to, and they affect other people. We need to, yeah, like, just like bring definitely this in back to humanity.
Yeah, definitely a question of resources and what we're funding. You know, and, you know, I think of one of the things that kind of like really pissed me off was I was watching that movie, a Michael Moore movie, Where to Invade Next. And he was in France and he was talking about what the French kids in the poorest town in France, by the way, eat for lunch. And they're eating 4-course meals. They're, mm-hmm, everybody drinks water. In fact, the school chefs actually meet in the mayor's office because cities are involved in the nutrition that our kids get in school. Mm-hmm. So what a novel idea. Mm-hmm. But it is kind, yeah, of a segue.
The ironic class place, well, just to finish that one up, you know who freaked everything up even worse most recently? Michelle Obama. After Michelle Obama went in there, started talking about nutrition, this nutrition, that, all of a sudden it was all these neoliberal solutions and it's all of these, you know, private corporations were going to bring the solution. They could do it better. And then we have all this packaged nasty food that nobody wants.
Yeah. At the same time, they were fighting the show about,
so it's okay,
about exercise in school. That's kind of Republicans, yeah, thing. But so it's second to last topic I wanted to talk to you guys about.
Exercising in the school. You know what? If you want to talk about that, though, who were the kids who were getting sick and who were dying of COVID? The kids who were overweight and the kids who were sick. So there's something about being healthy and making an emphasis on that. I do believe that that's another thing that we're lacking in this country. We have poor health and we have poor, you know, physical health. And this is fact. You know, we got to move.
Yeah.
We got to move more.
I mean, this bodice.
As I drink my course.
But you know, dad bods, they're all the rage now and days is different, but you know, get healthy, you know, kids on a healthy start. And I think it goes from like mental, emotional to physical. And you know what I mean? Like nutrition. We need better foods. You know, we have all these kids who are obese and like we're getting a lot of calories, and I'm the worst with soda and with like, you know, sugar stuff, where I'm the worst. We are getting a lot of calories, but not enough nutrition. So all of those things, you know, we need to focus on, you know, all of it. Well rounded.
I think of like, you know, Michael Bloomberg trying to like reduce soda sizes and then he got met with people.
I don't know about all of that. I think like forcing people into doing things and taxing people and out of doing things, that's bullshit. And taxes are just, it always affects the poor people more than anybody else. So I'm not for like these like random ass, like, you know, at the cashier taxes. I don't agree with any of that. But I think that education, teaching people, you know, how that project where it's like this much sugar in this and this much sugar in soda or whatever. I think if you get a visualization of what exactly you're consuming and things like that and getting better options right off the bat. I don't want to know how much
sugar is in my Kool-Aid. I don't want
to know. You know, like that, you know, it's all poison, you guys, and no matter how yummy it tastes, but. You know, we got to get better for ourselves, for our children. You know, Tupac was on that vibe. You know what I mean? Like, we need to get better. You know, we need to intake better Tupac, things from like visual to feelings to food to everything. It starts right here.
Tupac's an interesting case because he grew up in a time where, you know, Black Panther and communist groups were around and they were providing community breakfast and stuff to kids, and he was one of those kids that
is that what you can do with a large office space that's open to community involvement?
That's one of the things. But I did want to touch on, since we're talking about education, so I did want to talk about the story about Moms for Liberty, which is this group that is was started by this conservative woman, Tiffany Justice. They rose to prominence in Florida, you know, battling things like CRT and mask mandates and pushing for Florida to pass this Don't Say Gay bill. They are mobilizing for people to be elected to school boards across the country. And I'm just kind of wondering with the factor that education policy played in the election of like Glenn Youngkin in Virginia, what do you think, what is and what should be the response of the Democratic Party to this going on?
I don't know what the Democratic Party should be doing, but I think what good people should be doing across the country is getting it together and figuring out what you need to do to run for office. You know, people like to talk about, oh, this person is this, is that person is that. Well, that's the person that you're allowing to run things. So unless you want it to be otherwise, you're either going to do it yourself or find somebody who is going to do it. So I think that we need to start focusing on taking seats of power, taking power, grabbing it, keeping it, and wielding it around, to use resources, to take over every single seat in the city, the county, the state, all of it. I think that every single one of these seats and these seats of power that come with a budget, that come with making a dictating policy, we should be seizing every single one. So what I'm hoping is that during my time in Congress, which I only plan on being there for 3 terms, so for six years, what can we do? What can we get done? In those 6 years, I hope to be able to teach hundreds of people to be able to run for office. I hope to be able to have hundreds of students come through our office space and have field trips where we can teach them and have, like, you know, one day workshops where we can empower them so that they can start planning for that future to take over these seats of power. What I want to do is to change the mindset of working class people to realize that these positions of power, we've been fighting the power for way too long. It's time to be the power, take the power, and use that power for good. And that's it. Let's see what we can get done. That's what I think we need to do. We need to figure out. So that's what they're doing. They've been doing that. They've been doing that. You know, people sitting around, oh, I think it gets donate, and like, oh, we'll just get that guy into office. What the hell happened when we got this guy into office? A whole lot of nothing.
I know. I just joined a parents group online this past year because, you know, the earlier 2021, I guess later 2021, early 2022, when they were talking about reopening the schools and then schools opening and having mask mandates. My wife's a registered nurse at a school district, and people were showing up armed to protest. And so we got really involved in what was happening on our school board because it happens to be the school board, the school district that she works at, but also the one that our oldest daughter attends. So we became very involved. And so, Brent, I'm wondering, you know, you are my megaphone to the party at large. I think if you what are your thoughts on that? And should that even be should the party at large be responding to a group of their own that is encouraging people to run for office and run for school boards across the country with some kind of training or unified training or even possibility of getting some funding?
I mean, I'd love to see the Democrats actually support new challengers, candidates at all levels, because they're, from my personal experience, not doing that. They talk a big talk and they send out mailers saying a whole lot of things that I certainly never saw to be reality. we need to denounce these groups that are, you know, publicly and loudly denounce the groups that are, you know, these hate groups that are, you know, causing these issues. I would like to see the Democrats get active in fighting back by getting people to, you know, local people to run in those situations. I don't see it happening.
I think good people across the country need to just run, because there's going to be some areas where a Democrat is not going to stand a chance. So we need to have like good Republicans, which they're out there. You fucking know them. You know what I mean? They're in our lives. There's good people who maybe see things certain way, whatever. But most of the people around my life are good people. Like, we don't agree on one thing, we don't agree on another, but like, they're good people, and sometimes you're going to compromise, sometimes you're not, and sometimes you're going to agree to disagree, right? You have to bring out guns and stuff like that. Like, can we just talk about it, and can we let science and reality lead the way? Like, that would be the best thing to do. And I think that, you know, that there's like some areas where, you know, maybe it's in some Democrat or like, you know, some lefty progressive person's best interest to run as a Republican, because that's like their only chance and they're the only way in that area. It doesn't matter. Good people need to run for positions of power and do good with it. And I think that it doesn't matter what party you are. It doesn't matter like where you come from. It doesn't matter where you were born. It doesn't matter like your gender. It doesn't matter your affiliation, any sort of way. Are you doing good for your community? Are you doing good with the resources, right? Are you being honest? Are you being truthful? Are you being transparent where you stand on the issues? And I think that that's really where we need more good people running for positions of power, period. And there's a lot of these seats within government that you never run for. They get appointed or you get hired and it is what it is. So look around. Like, look around. There's a lot of power, like, in the clerk and all these other offices and stuff like that. Like, there right. is power and knowledge and having those connections. By all means, bro, like, get them all. Like, I think everybody, all the good people should be running for office. Good people should be having babies. You know what I'm saying? I'm pro-choice, but I say, choose to have a baby. Why not? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're a good person, you're able to do it, you can handle it. I think, and that's what I'm seeing. I see a lot of good people choosing not to have children. And here we have Elon Musk and what, baby number, like, 12 or whatever. Like, come on, man. Like, you know, who do we want populating this earth? Who do we want, you know, leading the way, right? I mean, it comes down to, what are we doing? We're not having babies. We're not running for office. But I mean, but boom, you can't sit around and cry about it.
Well, I read an article on CNN. Oh, no, it was CNBC that millennials are the reason for inflation. But which was really weird. I feel like they just write those things.
Boomer thing?
Write those things to make people upset. So either we click on it being upset, or like boomers click on it to say like, oh, who was it us? So it's like they get it either way.
Let's jump back. Have you seen the beginning of Idiocracy, the movie?
It's been a while since I watched it, but I remember it.
That's it. It's the two.
It's on Prime right now.
The two the husband and wife that are like, oh, we can't have a baby yet because we don't have this. We can't have a baby yet because we don't have that. We're going to try and have a baby, but we waited too long. So now we're whatever. And then, but the other side is just like their family
having all the babies. It's true. If you didn't handle it, if you want them.
I feel like, as
a pro-choice person, and I talk to like these, you know, pro-lifers and stuff, and I'm like, look, imagine how many babies haven't been born because the couple didn't, like the two people that were ready to have a child were not financially, they didn't think they had the childcare, and they didn't think they had, like, you know what I mean? All these things. What if we had a system available where they had, you know, healthcare, they had affordable housing, and they had guaranteed childcare? Imagine, you know what I mean? How much life we can really be helping out. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I think that these are the conversations that we can be having with people. They're like, oh, these things make sense, and these things need to make sense for people. And we have Republicans. I've had Republicans canvass for me. You know what I'm saying? It's nice. You'd be surprised by what talking to people and making sense to these policies and like in a real life situation and how it could really benefit whatever their goals might be. Their goals are like protect the babies. Okay. Healthcare for the mom and childcare for the baby and affordable housing from when they're around. Huh? How about that? Can't argue with that. And so, you know, these are the things that people, you know, are coming around to, especially working class people, these rich ass people. They're like, oh, this is like crazy talk. That's because they're rich. They're like a handout, like, or whatever. Like, no. Regular people, regular conservatives understand that, hey, they're getting like freebies. Like these mega corporations, they're not paying any taxes. You and I pay taxes. They get that part. I go to them. What do you and I have taxes to have in common? Taxes, we can't get around those, and death, and we want the best for our children. We have way more in common with each other right here next door than like somebody who looks like you, who's from, you know, like the same background as you, but who comes from a different place financially, and they just don't get it. It's a whole different thing. Working class people, we can come together. Once we realize that the battle isn't left versus right, it's top versus bottom and right versus wrong in reality, that's when we can really make some changes happen. And that's what I'm hoping to be able to do, is to bring forth like, you know, the reality, the situations, and be transparent of like, what are like our hangups? Of why can't I get things passed in Congress, et cetera. Along with educating the people, using our platform to really teach them the tools necessary for them to do their own organizing, do real organizing. Everybody on this day, at this time, at your local town hall, go. You know what I mean? Getting everybody out there and really pushing and getting people onto the streets. We need to go out. We need to look at each other in the eye, and we need to interact with each other. And we need to talk. And I think that if we can get more of that happening, communities can really start making changes. Cities, states, et cetera, it'll spread out. Here in Los Angeles, for example, if you guys haven't been paying attention, we have abolitionists getting elected into city council. We have challengers getting first place against incumbents and going off to the general in November. We have these big, big things happening, and it comes down to people are tired of it. They want something different, and it's up to you and me to give them that. We set the standard, okay, in this country of so many privileges and rights and whatever. We also have responsibilities, and either we're running for office, we're holding those people accountable, we're supporting somebody, but we need to get power, hold on to it, and never, never let it go. And, most importantly, train your replacement. For fuck's sake, train your replacement. Don't say that till you're freaking 80 million years old. No offense, Bernie Sanders, I love you with all my heart. But you should have already had known who's going to replace you by now.
Dianne Feinstein is who I thought of when you said that. Because
okay, Pelosi. Oh, my God.
Yeah. 52 years in office.
It's a long time. It's a long time.
I just question for the panel. One last thought, really. And it's going back to Joe. So Joe Biden went on a Middle East trip to Saudi Arabia this week. Your thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. Is that the one where he was trying to shake the air on one of those things, right? Like, so that's like, I think the second time that he's trying to shake the air. But no, he was pointing at the chair. That's what it was. I'm like, I don't know what's worse, that he forgot where he was sitting or that. Anyways, I think, again, if you pay attention, it's really embarrassing. I think that if we take a look at, you know, he made it very clear where he stands on the Israel-Palestinian issue. He says, you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist, and I'm a Zionist, and he's proud of it. You know what I mean? He's out there, you know, making declarations. And I think that that's, you know, making it very clear wherever you stand on the issues, you know, where Joe Biden stands on it all. And so it's either, are we going to support it, or are we going to push for something different? And I think it's time for people to figure out what we're going to do for 2024. It's important.
Brent, your thoughts on this?
I'm not touching it. I'm not touching Biden's Mideast trip. I'm sorry. I won't do it. I won't. What are your thoughts, Lauren?
Well, I just, you know, think we found out that the price of Khashoggi's murder was 2.8 billion barrels of oil.
Oh my gosh, I had forgotten about that.
So, like, you know, it's one of those things that, like, again, it hurts our credibility for us to stand up and say we are against dictators and we want people to live in freedom and this and that at the same time. Unless you're a country in Central America, then we will be in your backyard. And unless you have tons of oil, then we're...
Oh, unless you have some resources, we're going to bring democracy to you, or we're going to, like, try and get some of that some way or another. It's pathetic. I don't know.
I understand it. The, like, you know, people are hurting here, and that the thought that we could get them to you know, alleviate some stress here. Do you eat a little crow? I think, you know, I understand it. I'm just disappointed that was the case.
I'll agree with you 100%, Lauren.
From my understanding, I think Mexico has, like, a booming of oil themselves. I don't think that we can probably work something else out. You know, I'm sure there's other solutions that we can bring to the table. There's other options. There's other ways. There's other creative ways. There's, you know, if you're just getting oil from over there, it doesn't make it any less bad if it's from over here. So let's figure something else out. You know, when we're talking transitioning to 100% renewable, doesn't mean, like, oh, we're going to be a renewable. We're going to be importing all of the crude oil from somewhere else. Like, what the fuck does that even mean? That doesn't even make any sense. So we need to figure out what's the most, like, humanitarian and just way to transition. And that might mean maybe, you know, we need to increase production here locally for the time being so that we're not fucking around with, like, dictatorships and, like, fascistic countries and, you know, people who, like, decapitate, you know, people in the public square, you know what I mean? And chop up people in embassies and stuff like that. Like, how about we don't do that? And, like, we just figure out there's other solutions. There's, like, more smaller solutions. There's bringing solar panels to, like, literally every house. They're, like, small scale solutions and applications to resolve problems. Like, these big mega corporations, these ginormous energy farms, like, this is crazy. Like, it's like no common sense in addressing the issue. Like, all common sense has left the chat and it's all of these, like, crazy people. We have a cacocracy. We have the shittiest people running the country. We need to, like, get them all out. And I mean, sometimes we need to push the reset button. I don't know.
Every, like, you know, when I would do spaces or like, you know, engagement with voters, and we would talk about green economy and, you know, having jobs, creating green energy that are made in the United States. These are U.S. jobs, right? I always get, well, you know, back when Trump was president, America was energy independent. And I don't know where that myth of America being energy independent came from when Trump was president, because we were still, you know, we have been among the top exporters of oil for a while. I think a while. And our problem now is, like, we have a refinery problem, but we have never, like, the Keystone XL pipeline, people forget the first word of that was the Trans-Canadian Keystone XL pipeline. It was not American oil that they were bringing down and selling, refining and selling at the world market price. So I don't know where this myth of, if you're really about energy independence for America.
It's low information voters with sound bites, and the Republicans win that battle every single day.
Yeah,
because Democrats need a 40-page white paper on every single topic, because we can't fucking break something down. And when we do, we attack our own, going, well, where are all the fucking details? Where are your notes? Where are your footnotes?
Yeah,
where's your index? Because we need more people like Politics Girl in our fucking politics that break it down and say how the fuck it is in a way that people understand it. It just drives me up the wall. It absolutely sends me ballistic, because our side is happy to tear our side down. And I say, hold our side accountable, but don't go, oh, well, I know that it's right, but you didn't quite cite the sort. Like, stop tearing down our message. We need the three-word chants. The freaking Republicans have three-word chants coming out of their ears, and they
go
use
woke,
the
go broke
to win, right?
Go woke, go broke.
That's a foreword, but yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Don't go twice.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of those things that we need to, and I think as our party, you know, gets younger and younger blood, that we'll get better about that. When I first got on Twitter, I was always like trying to get to full 280 characters and like then backspacing and getting myself so I could say as much as humanly possible, until later I figured out that four words will carry out to a larger audience more than a full
lock
tweet
her
will.
Up.
I mean, just this is fucked on a bad news day. That thing will go until whatever. Everybody knows what you're talking about. And they're like, well, Brent thinks it's fucked too. But if you put in, well, because of this and that and this detail, whatever, people are like, yeah, boring. Who cares?
That is true. That's true. You know what? That's a good thing to bring up about when dealing with candidates and their material. One thing that I've noticed is that on our side, God damn it, we put so much fucking words to it. And most people do not want to read that much. And if they do, if you do put something on it, like a lot of words, it has to be powerful. Like you have to use those words like for its most, at most, you know? And I think that is something that we do. We can't keep it short. And that's something that I think that our side, we can focus on that quite better.
I just think that sometimes we have really in-depth, like, this is my whole thing. As Democrats, we have solutions to these problems. Republicans whine about the problems and say, well, if you elect us, you know, Democrats are making everything worse and this and that. I see it all the time in comments. This is all because of the terrible Democrat policies in California and all this other stuff. I see it all the time. But, like, you know, we have – like actual responses and logical plans to solve some of these issues. And mm-hmm. Republicans don't. They just say no. They point the finger, and it's really easy to say lock her up and all this other stuff without having any actual policy solutions. And they've gotten by with just that because – I want to say because some Democrats – but it is partially because of some Democrats who are not wholeheartedly going in and solving the problems that people have.
Right.
And so with that, we'll go ahead and pause there. Angelica, thank you for joining us. I'm going to give you – so my big thing when I was a candidate was having the 1 minute wrap up and having that down pat. Go ahead and give us your 1 minute sell on why you need to be the next representative from California's 29th.
Thank you. Well, here we are. My name is Angelica Dueñas. I'm running for Congress in California's 29th congressional district, which is in Los Angeles. And we are running a 100% people power campaign. We're running against a 25-plus-year entrenched politician who has taken millions of dollars from mega corporations and super PACs. He has had over 25 years to show us what he's all about, and our community has suffered for it. We need change, and the people are looking for it. We are fighting for Medicare for all, affordable housing, a Green New Deal, guaranteed jobs, tuition-free higher education, for loan forgiveness for school loans, to really give the working-class people the ability to get ahead, not just get by. So if you have time, please, and you're local to Los Angeles, please sign up to volunteer. AngelicaForCongress.com/volunteer. If you have a couple of extra coins, please donate them to us. We can do so much with very little. Like you heard earlier before, with less than $80,000, we were able to get 43.3% of the vote against $1,400,000. He has already spent over $1 million. He has an independent expenditure of over $250,000. So we need your help. Please donate AngelicaForCongress.com. Check out our platform. Hopefully we can inspire you to get behind our movement.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Angelica. Is it Dueñas?
Dueñas, yes.
See, I have some little California roots here. for joining us on the show today. Don't forget to join us next week, where we are going to be talking with Natalie James, who's running for U.S. Senate in Arkansas. And there's a whole big thing happening in Arkansas with Democrats trying to take back the state that is seen as, you know, Republican. We have a couple of candidates running in Arkansas right now that are not only challenging, but have the possibility to win. And so I'm excited to talk to her next week. And I hope you guys have a great night.
Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.